camera here.
No, I just...
Are you going to stage something with the Hollywood sign behind this?
Yeah. Yeah, we see what happens. No, I carry it with me because you never know when you're going to need it.
It's like a weapon.
Yeah. Gary.
What about you not having your glasses at the Cannes Film Festival? That we have.
Oh, yeah. Did Russell tell you this?
Yeah.
He's always giving me the business because the first time I saw this wonderful movie that Dante Spinotti shot so brilliantly, I saw it with sunglasses on because I left my FAS. These are my FAS, see? Yes, and these are my closes. Forget about it. Yeah, it's the next thing.
Forget about it.
Walk around with a, yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's from New Jersey. They invented that.
That's right.
You once described some... Because I'm from New Jersey, that's why...
Yeah, where are you from again?
Trenton.
Here. Trenton, oh yeah.
So, okay. That's you know what Asbury Park looks like. You described it in winter as looking like an Antonioni landscape.
That's true.
That is poetry.
No, it's like, no, or Bergman, or Bergman-esque. No, seriously.
He's
I mean,
serious.
You're laughing, but it's like true. You know, New Jersey is the Garden State. Mm-hmm. It is a beautiful, beautiful state. And some of the scenes down at the shore are just magnificent. And it's not only in the bright, sunshiny times when you can walk on the boardwalk and, you know, the sky is bluer than you've ever seen anything, and dotted with, like, little white clouds but in the winter when, you know, in different times in the winter, some, like, in the autumn when you know, there's storm clouds, you know, threatening the shore and just gorgeous, beautiful, you know, gray skies with, you know, lots of all the different colors in the gray scale. I mean, all the different shades in the gray scale. And then in the winter, you know, there's some really dramatic moments. You can, you know, places that you can go down the shore. Yeah, I think
so
it's...
What happened with the cities, like Trenton? You mentioned...
Well, I don't know anything about Trenton. I know that Asbury Park was, like, destroyed by the, you know, politicians' mismanagement. And, like, a couple of stories, quick ones. One is Walter Reed had two theaters down there, the Mayfair and the St. James. The Mayfair was built in the 30s. It was a Moroccan palace. Mm-hmm. It was the most gorgeous thing you ever saw in your life. The St. James... built a bit later, but still a beautiful theater, you know, with lush seats and, you know, big screen and good sound and, you know, all this. And at one point, the city was, like, on the wane. Shopping centers were being built, and they still gave you tickets when you went down to buy something at the 5 and 10. You couldn't shop. It was a beautiful downtown area. Steinbeck's. We had big department stores and Woolworths and Nick and Liggett's drugstore where you could with a fountain and the whole thing. Really cool stuff. You know, you couldn't park. There's no place to park, and you get a ticket. People all went out to the shopping centers, and the stores started like feeling it. And the next thing you know, the stores were looking for places out at the shopping centers to put their stores, and the city started going under, and Walter Reed comes to them and says, look, you want to give me a break on my taxes because I'm paying a lot of taxes. The town is not what it used to be. I still have to run my movie theaters. And they said no. So he says, okay, we can't make a deal? He says, no. So he tore the two theaters down, tore them down, put a wrecking ball to them. Okay? So there's now two big parking lots that nobody parks in. Okay? So this is just like the way it is. What was the movie Woody used the shore in? Woody Allen shot down the shore in Stardust Memories. And it was all that stuff down. It was all in Asbury, and the big place was in Ocean Grove and all that stuff. There's a casino, which was a big black, wonderfully ornate building. With when I was a kid, it had a green roof. Green, beautiful, green roof. And I didn't know when I was a kid that it was copper and that it had this patina on it, and it was gorgeous, okay? And at one time, I can't remember when, the roof was black. I don't know what happened to it. What happened to it? What they did was they sold the copper. They took it off the roof and sold the copper. And now you got this wooden old shack for a roof. So let's not talk about
it. Well, in a way, L.A. Confidential.
Talk about L.A. Confidential, this wonderful movie that Curtis Hanson worked on and made into a brilliant film noir, which doesn't it titillate, makes you feel good when you see a good film noir movie,
like
you know what I mean?
We
love it.
It's tough to evoke that whole milieu.
It is. And the thing is that we like it so much, see, as moviegoers, or people who like movies anyway, we yearn for it, and when it works, bang, it's exciting. I really... I'm sorry, I missed the question.
What was the biggest challenge?
For me?
Evoking that.
Getting up early to go to work. let's see. Well, you know, Curtis put all this stuff before everybody, his entire team, his collaborative, workforce, which I was part of, with which every actor is, and together with the production designer and Dante and all those, you know, the key people, put together a really wonderful movie. I guess the challenges were his, and we contributed what we could to make it right, the costume designer and all that, and then the actors.
Do you know that they're using your Hoffa music with the TV commercial?
Yeah.
They use that music?
A lot. It was great music. Yeah. It was David Newman, who's done all the movies that I've made so far. He's done all the scores.
Were you born this romantic, or who instilled that in you? I'm not trying to be funny at all.
No.
Kind of an Italian.
I'm Italian, you know. There you go. So set. Enough
said. No, but I mean, you think of Basica and that sort of thing. I mean, you have this appreciation of these guys haven't seen Asbury. That's a real appreciation of what.
Yeah.
You're
well, the thing is that I don't know. I mean, you know, everybody's, you know, in your household or what your mother or father are like or your situation. I have two older sisters who took care of me pretty much, and my father and mother were older when I was born, and my grandparents were all, except for one, passed away, and they were all from Italy, and they, I don't know why. I just cared about the place, you know.
It sounds like there's an autobiography in there, so mm-hmm. Film or
someday maybe. I don't think so for now.
A lot of female influence, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've always been around women all my life. Until my son was born, it was like the three of them ganging up on me, you know, the house.
Did you know Jack Nicholson growing up?
I knew of him because we lived near each other, and when I started to become aware of Jack, his sister and my cousin were very close. They went to school together, and when Jack went to California, when she would come over, my cousin would talk about this guy who was like this really handsome guy who was going to be a movie star, and that was Jack. And he came from the town right next to us, Neptune, and Wanamath, that area. So I was aware of him. Then the first time then of course his work I was aware of because, you know, seeing his movies. And then the first time we met was in Cuckoo's Nest on the set. And for the first 10 days of rehearsal that Milos gave us, I didn't tell him that I was from, you know, that I had that connection. And then one day, Michael told him, Douglas told him, and I was in the day room with a bunch of guys just hanging out with Vinny Schiavelli and Chris Lloyd, and we were just maybe playing cards. And Jack came running around the corner. You're from Asbury? Why didn't you tell me? He was going crazy. It was like a Lundsman, you know. He found a guy from Jersey.
Isn't anything comparable to that in the L.A. milieu, is there? I mean,
well, no, we're
closeness, that Baltimore thing in Diner. I
mean, right,
there's nothing
right.
Like that in
or
LA.
In Tin Men, yeah.
I mean, why?
Yeah.
Or is there that I just don't know about?
I don't know. I really, I mean, you'd have to be two guys or two girls from... Mm-hmm. L.A., you know. I mean, there is, I guess there is the one thing about it is like, you were born in L.A., so was I. You know, that would be there, you know what I mean? That kind of thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, so many people make fun of it, that's part of it. But in this film, this was almost L.A. while it still was neighborhoods. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
You know, and there's neighborhoods now, you have Los Feliz or whatever, and you have, but it's, there's not that sense of community, and the movie stars aren't treated the same way, I would guess. I mean, there's still, you know.
No, I don't think there's as much blackmail going on now as there was.
No, it's all out in the open. It's all out in the open now.
Right.
I'm kind of proud of her.
Yeah, we found out about your bunion, and we're going to write about it.
How hard is it for you to raise a family?
The shame of having a bunion.
Don't say that, I have a bunion right now. How hard is it for you to raise? You have small children. How hard is it for you to raise a family?
Well, my kids are
normally.
Well, we're doing really knock wood. Thank God, we got a good family. Everything's going good. The kids are in school now. They go to school in L.A. And I was going to say the name. That would have been a mistake. Mm-hmm. But they're. You know, they're doing really well. The kids are having a good time, and they're getting a good education. They have a great movie education because we watch movies constantly. They are 14, 12, and 9, two girls and a boy, and they've probably seen, maybe probably not as many movies as you have, but they're gaining on you quick.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and by the time, you know, I mean, they really love it. And
what were movies for you when you were a kid?
It was my salvation. I went to these two. The reason I'm so pissed off about them tearing down these theaters is I lived in the town. Asbury was a mile square. That was it. It was a jewel. It was a jewel on the shore of the Jersey Shore, and there were seven. I believe, movie theaters. There was the Mayfair, there was the St. James, there was the Lyric, there was the Paramount, there was the Savoy, there was the Baronet, and there was six movie theaters, like I said, in a mile square town. We had the first run movies. They built the bridge on the River Kwai over Cookman Avenue. You know, big band. That was a promotion for the movie. They, you know, and in the Lyric, you could see foreign films. In Asbury Park, you could see a De Sica movie. You could see a Fellini movie. You could see a Rossellini movie. You could, you know, there weren't many people in there. I'll tell you that. But you know, I went a few times with my sisters.
You had a premiere there. What?
We had a premiere at the Paramount Theater for Throw Mama. From the train, we brought the sound in and put a screen up, and we had to move the booth down because it wasn't built as a movie theater, and the parallax was so, like, off that there was a kind of a weird look to the actors on the screen. We never noticed that when we were watching Errol Flynn when we were kids, but we moved the booth for this premiere down to the first level of the balcony because the booth was way up and it was like an opera house. And it was built like, it's still there. It's on the boardwalk in Asbury. It was like modeled after Radio City Music Hall. If you know what the proscenium of that looks like, it's got these arches, these big, beautiful, gold kind of, no, not, it's probably where McDonald's got the idea. But anyway.
Well, it has to mean something that movies once had a frame around it, and an ornate frame at that, and now they don't. That's... That simple fact has got to indicate something.
Well, I think that was that, like, for instance, that particular thing, even though we would like to think that was, you know, maybe it gave it something that it doesn't have, but, you know, all these places were converted, you know, vaudeville houses and movie and theaters. This place was built for the Marx Brothers. This place in Asbury was built for their show that our Marx Brothers were doing. They did
Paramount?
Yes, this Paramount Theater, I don't know what it was called at the time, but they did they worked out their routines
on the road,
right? On the road for their movies and for everything. They did them, which is a really terrific thing. They did all their, you know, I'm sure Captain Spaulding was performed on that stage, you know, I hope.
Could I steal a moment to ask you about Matilda?
Yes.
I think it's by far the best of the Roald Dahl adaptations.
Thank you. Thank you very
Obviously
much.
Obviously close to your
and,
heart.
And by the way, you know, something that will be really thrilling to you is we just passed, not long ago, the $100 million mark for Matilda in all media now, because we did 70-some-odd million dollars worldwide in box office, and we sold almost 5 million cassettes, which means that the movie has done, you know, like an extraordinary amount of money for the studio.
But I have a complaint about the movie.
Okay, go ahead.
I didn't see a credit for Quentin Blake's illustrations, because somebody knew those illustrations.
Like, what? You know what? Quentin Blake and I are like this.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. And there was a problem about putting Quentin... There was some kind of thing that we couldn't put Quentin Blake's... Because I wanted to call it... I couldn't even say Roald Dahl's Matilda. Mm-hmm. I had so many problems with TriStar about this movie that it was like, I'm telling you, I say I want something, they say no. I say I want something, they say no. It was like one of the most horrendous experiences I ever had as a filmmaker in my life. So, but I'm very happy with the way children embrace the movie and come to me everywhere and say how much they love the picture. We the new regime at TriStar Columbia, the different story. These people came by too late after I've already put through the ringer. I don't mean to complain because I don't think it's a good thing to do, but it's something that pisses me off because we were all trying to do the right thing. And even the people at the Dahl Foundation were very supportive of everything that I did. Quentin, actually, I'm really, they fought me on credits. They limited my credits in the movie. This was one of the reasons why Quentin didn't get a credit. They were going to sue me for giving people credit in the end of the movie. The motherfuckers. Excuse me. You don't have to print that. But I'm telling you, you know, I swear to God, when I said to them that I wanted a credit, and I called people like carpenters and like people that they wouldn't give credit to on the movie. Because it's their, you know what they give you? It's their policy. This bullshit. It's their policy not to allow us to use other music over the lady in the thing. Bullshit. Did you see Men in Black? You know what I'm saying? It's bullshit. You know what I'm saying? It was like, there are a couple of people over there who tortured me. I don't mean to sound like the guy on the cross. Wait a while. You know what I'm saying? Jesus Christ. Okay, let me stop. But anyway, I'm glad you liked the movie. I'm really excited about it.
It's just it would have been a first to have had an illustrator credit. It would have been a first to have had an illustrator credit.
Yeah, you know, and look, and by the way, the letters, and this is good that we're talking about this, the lettering, I made hats with Quentin's letter. Quentin did this for me. I called him up. I said, look, we're going to start the movie. We've been talking because I wanted everybody who contributed to Rawls' work to be part of this experience. We talked. I said, look, I'm going to make hats, right? Write Matilda a couple of different ways and send it to me. And he did. He wrote it. And I put it on the hats for the crew, right? The lettering in the movie, all the lettering in the movie is his. And I couldn't give him a credit. All the lettering in the movie is Quentin's. Isn't that a bitch?
What do you think he wants money for? Is that what
they were just being bad. They were just being bad. They were just being bad boys and girls.
What is the percentage of alienating you? I mean, why would
Because okay. Hmm? I'm telling you, it was like pulling teeth at every juncture. You know, the big thing is that I don't know why. I swear I do not know why they made it so difficult. But I literally had faxes and lawyers and all kinds of stuff. They were limiting me giving people credit in the end of the movie. Not only Quentin, but carpenters and and painters and people that work with me, and it was just a sick, sad situation, and they should be ashamed. They should be ashamed of themselves.
Well, actually, I had a reason for bringing it up because you play a character.
Huh?
Speaking of shame, Hush Hush Magazine.
Oh yeah, let's thank you very much. Yeah. Well, get us back to this.
You know, could you talk a little? You know, that's a great. You know, those scandal magazines were really scandal magazines.
Oh man,
they were good though.
Tabloids, they almost seem to be an adjunct sometimes of the
yes,
promotion
yes.
system. I mean, could you talk about the differences you've seen
between
then and now?
Well, I mean, like, there's no comparison because, I mean, at that time it was like I was a visionary. Sid Hudgens was, like, he was like Edison. He was like, you know, he was at the forefront, the vanguard of this new industry. He created this industry. If you look at it, you know, I would like to think that Sid was the only guy doing it. And so it was, that's the way I approached the role. I mean, what it's become, you know, is... you know, he says he's going to be, someday it's going to be television and radio and, you know, it's going to be big and sensational kinds of sideshow attractions. But now you see it everywhere. It's like just, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's no big deal now. I mean, like, you know, you can't, it's hard to find an event. Unfortunately, the tragedy of it is that the, you know, you have a thing happen like that happened to this wonderful woman and her boyfriend, Dodi, and Princess Di, and the bodyguard, and the driver. I mean, it's just tragic that is the outcome. I mean, if that was Sid's doing, he got what he deserved. It's a terrible thing, but I don't, you know, it was different. Sid was compromising people, setting them up, and, you know, it had... I don't know. I guess it was more dignified. It's an oxymoron, but I'm telling you that, like, for instance, you know, there was more of a design, and there was more of a. It wasn't like, you know, blatantly running after somebody and trying to photograph their baby, or, you know, I don't think that was it. It was more of a. It was sleazier, but it was less invasive in a way.
Less pictures, too.
Yeah, less pictures.
Dan Duryea wears dresses. I remember that.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't read that story?
Hollywood Confidential. You are the only person, though, in the movie that really, truly enjoys what he's doing.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Well, that was it. You know, I felt like Columbus.
Was it based on somebody real, or is it just a...
Man, I think he's just like... James has got a... You know, you'd have to ask... Elroy about that one because
Hollywood Confidential was a real magazine.
Yeah, it was a real magazine. And if you look in the movie, we used the Curtis used the colors of the magazine and all. It was kind of like really.
How'd you get along
but
with
Hush
you?
Hush was like a great idea.
You seem like you might get along with James Elroy, didn't you?
Yeah, we have a good time together. He's got a great sense of humor. I love the way he loves himself.
That's true.
He is. I think it's a, you know, a guy who's comfortable with himself and is doing the great work he's doing. I take my hat off to him. I think it's a great thing. He's a positive force, you know, in a kind of a dark way.
The thing is, he puts some real people in these books. You have to be careful you don't wind up in his next book that he makes you the actor or something.
Wouldn't it be great to have seen his next book?
It depends how he uses you.
That's all right. Come on.
Did you mean American Cowboy? I mean, he's Jack Ruby with the dogs, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, oh.
There's a lot of sleazeballs in movies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's nice. More fun.
Well, the used car.
I'm gonna play like, you know, I don't know. I could play a nice guy, you know, someday. I'm not ready to play Gandhi. You know what I'm saying? I'm not ready to do Gandhi 2. Shave the head. I'm not far away from doing that, you know. Take all the hair off. Go for it.
How about you and Michael Douglas, your best buddy?
Oh, my best buddy. I love the guy. We've known each other since the, you know, the... mid-60s, early 60s. We roomed together in New York. We were good friends. We talk all the time. We go through lots and lots of stuff together. And, you know, he is absolutely my best friend. It's one of those good things to have, a best buddy. And we can work together again. Yes, we talk about it all the time. I'm really looking forward to seeing The Game, which I know is a good movie because, you know, Mikey's in it. Mm-hmm. And... So, you know, it's not out of the, you know, we're just looking for something to do. And we're all doing a lot of things and, you know, fitting it in and trying to find. But it's basically the material. So if it ain't on the page, it ain't on the stage.
Are you doing anything now?
Right now? Yeah, well, we have Gattaca opening. I'm going to talk to you about it in a couple of days. I can't wait for you to see it. And it's nice, yeah. It's really provocative, kind of like, you know. We have a, I guess I shouldn't tell you what we're going to do with the ads, but we have this, you know, really cool one that it says, you know, you grab the end of it. You turn a page in a newspaper, right? And it says, thank you for, you know, you just gave us a sample of your DNA.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, because it's true that, you know, this stuff is wild. And Gattaca, of course, comes from the genetic, those G's and A's and C's and T's are what you are. You will have that in you, in your fingernail, in your eyelash, in your blood, in your being. And that's how the helix is created, with G's and A's and T's and C's. They're substance. They're things. They are like atoms. They are, what do you call, chromosomes. That's what I was looking for. And and you take out and you alter. That's what you do. Once they map the body, they're going to be able to do anything. They could create anything from these and manipulate them in any way. And this movie takes place in the time, in the near future, when that's a given. When you were born, the baby comes out, bing. They know how long you're going to live, whether you're going to be bald, whether you're going to be tall, whether you're going to be they're going to know if you're going to have Alzheimer's. They're going to know if you're going to have once they map out the whole thing before you're born. Is what we're talking about, the valids and the invalids. That's when these places have come up where you can take, you know, before you're going to have a baby, you can go and you can get that egg, right? And you can get that sperm, and you can fix what you want to fix. You can engineer your own kid. You can say, I want blue eyes. I want them to have, like, you know, we have baldness in our family. I don't want that to happen. We want, you know, I want them to six fingers. I want them to be a pianist. You know, I want them to, let's not talk about penises, but but you can do anything. You know, so it's a real, you know, it's a kind of a, anyway, what was the question? We're working on, we finished The Kiss, which is Richard's movie with Holly, that's going to come out. He's editing. He's working on another movie with us now about Honey West, which is the TV show that we have the rights to. And that's going to be really cool, you know, a real good, tough private. No, we just start now with that. And we start Out of Sight in a couple of weeks, which is George Clooney, Jennifer Lopez, Ving Rhames, and Dennis Farina, and a lot of good people in the movie. Steven Soderbergh is directing.
Oh.
Yeah, really, it's Elmore Leonard's novel, last novel, that, you know, and then we're preparing, the sequel to the coolest movie ever made, you know, Get Shorty. Elmore's writing as we speak, I hope. In fact, I should call him up now.
Is that going to be a novel?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, he's going to write the novel. It's going to be really good. We got a great idea. He has a great idea, and we're going for it. Okay. Hey, this was really great. I'll see you in a couple.
The River Wild.